Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, Tony and I, we're going to talk about the mistakes that we've made in life.
In life? This is going to either be a very short podcast or a very long podcast.
No, we're going to talk about just mistakes that we've made in our businesses that have been pretty detrimental until we figured it out. At least the ones that I'm thinking have been pretty detrimental, but... Why don't you start? I want to hear yours first, just to gauge whether mine are worthy enough.
Okay. You're like, yours will be so colossal, we won't even have time. So this is an interesting one, and it's actually one that just came to my attention in the past 10 days. So we have this course. We were talking about making this course for a long time before we actually did it. As we've talked about this on other podcasts, I was very hesitant about doing a course. And then we did it and it's fine and it's great and I love it. But I'm working on a new course, which we haven't talked about at all, which we won't talk about for a while. So just like that's a teaser. And as I'm creating this course, I am ripping through it, right? It's like I'm laughing about how easy it is. And as I'm doing it, I'm thinking to myself, I sure wish back in like 2010 or 2009, I would have created a bunch of mini courses for the Happy Housewife and done them on autoplay, right? So not the level that Profitable Audience is, where it's very comprehensive, you know, weekly lives, things like that. But these courses where they're maybe like 5 modules, 5 lessons each, all pre-recorded, maybe like a Facebook group or something like that, but like very low maintenance courses. And as I'm creating this new course, and it's just so simple for me to do this, I'm like, I hate the fact that when something seems difficult in my business, like I will put it off because I don't exactly know how to do it, or there's like a stepping stone or a technology hurdle. And now that I've created a course, I realize how simple it is to actually create a course and how much money you can actually make by creating courses. And I'm so regretful that I did not do this 15 years ago when, one, courses weren't saturated, and then two, and I had people begging me for courses back then too, right? It wasn't like there wasn't a demand. There was 100% a demand, but I just didn't do it.
Huh. Okay. That's a good one. Cause I remember being there with you with your hesitations, but you know what was funny during that period is that there was like zero risk.
That's the other, right? There's no,
right. So I was trying to think, can you back up to back when we were talking about doing that course?
Yes.
I had to convince you, but I was just thinking to myself, there's no risk. If it flops, we just return everyone's money back.
Right.
Right. And we just call it a day.
Okay. There's an embarrassment risk, but minimal.
Sure. But no one has to know.
True.
Right.
Just be like, oh, we got really sick, we can't continue.
Or no, we just say, hey, we didn't get enough interest in this, so we decided not to do it. So can you walk me back to that day? What was the main reservation? I don't even remember anymore.
Well, I think it's a little bit different with the course we run for Profitable Audience, in that this is a weekly commitment. It's a very comprehensive course. It felt like a lot. And then on top of that, and this is actually the exact same hurdle. So I'm working with someone else on this course, and they had the exact same hurdle that I had. And I was like, I know how to help you through that, so let's partner, right? And it was, I know what I want to teach. I have all this stuff in my head, but I can't organize it on paper, right? I can't get it out of my head and into what seems like a course, like it's a course outline, right? Which I think I know we've talked about it in the course. I don't know if we've talked about it on a podcast, but just getting from like, I know I need to do something to actually implementing it. If you've never done it before, usually seems exceptionally overwhelming. And I think, you know, back 15 years ago, it was sort of the same thing of, I could have done a course on time management, right? Easy peasy. Probably could have written it in a week, maybe less. And had sold it for $79 or $49. And the thing is, it's like that course would still be like, time management doesn't change, right? If anything, like there's a technology piece that wasn't as available, like people weren't on their phones as much 15 years ago. But that course could still be making me money today if I had released it 15 years ago. If I had released a course on, you know, how to get your kids to eat vegetables or something like that and charged minimal amounts of money, those all would still be making money. Because I see that with the ebooks that I publish, like they still make money today, right? And I'm like, that was so great that I did that because it was fairly low effort and the money just still comes in. I mean, obviously it's not as much as it used to be because I don't promote them, but it's still money every month. And I look back at that and I was like, oh, I let the fact that it felt overwhelming keep me from doing it, which is the same feeling that I felt with the profitable audience course. But there was the additional component of the weekly live office hours, which you do have to say, like, hey, I'm willing to show up live probably 47 weeks out of the year, right? To teach people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Here's mine.
Okay.
And this is just something that I find myself doing every single time on every project. I always try to find the easy way to do things. And then it takes me like 2 or 3 years to realize that I need to do more work in order for it to be even more successful. But then, and then I start doing it and I was like, okay, this isn't that much more work. And let me just give you some context for this.
Yeah. What did you do?
Well, I was just thinking to myself, you know, my YouTube channel has been successful, but it's, I've always done it the lazy way. Like I've taken a blog post and, pretty much regurgitate it, and that's worked. And it's been like a low energy way of doing it that I've just, because that's how I can pump out videos really quickly. Recently, what I've started doing is I've started scripting them from scratch, you know, to make it more video like. And it's been working. So like the last video I published got like 200,000 views in like the first 2 days. The video before that got like 60,000 in just like 1 day. And it's more work, but in the beginning, I just wasn't willing to do that work. And it's taken me so long to doing the same thing until I was willing to change. So I just feel like I'm just slow to adapt. You know what I'm saying?
You wrote a whole book on this, though. I feel like you can't change now.
What do you mean?
Well, you wrote a whole book on like finding the low energy ways to do things, basically.
It is the low energy way of doing things, but this is still pretty low energy.
I agree.
But it's something I should have done a long time ago. It's just laziness, really, is what it is. And so I find myself just kind of kicking myself.
So your regret is that you're lazy?
Yeah, I don't know how to fix this about me either.
Really? It's funny because you're not late. You're not lazy in the traditional sense. So for example, you were out of town last week and it was not really a vacation. It was like family stuff. I never think visiting family is like a true vacation. It's not like you were on a cruise or at the beach somewhere.
Oh, it definitely wasn't a vacation. You know what I was doing, right?
Yeah. I didn't know if you wanted to say. Yeah. You're helping your mom move.
Yeah.
You were out of town, but it wasn't like a vacation. And, but we were talking about, and I was out of town and we were like, I said, you know, let's just not do office hours. And you're like, I need to stay in my routine. So you're not a lazy person in that you're always up, you know, we're recording this your time before 8 a.m. Right. So you get up, you get stuff done, you know, you have your list, you prioritize. But then when it comes to specific tasks, you find the lazy way to do them. So you're not a lazy person, but you're always looking for like the easy route to do things.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Yeah. But you're not lazy. Like when things need to be done, you take care of them.
But I always think of ways, like I'm thinking to myself, what if I bypassed that laziness and just did it the right way from the start?
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Right? It would. But yeah. I guess I was just chatting with a friend about this and he tried to make me feel better by saying, hey, sometimes you just got to get started by doing things the lazy way just so that you can, so you're just even willing to do it in the first place. And then you can think about refining your craft.
I was actually thinking about that when you were telling the story. It's like, well, if that's what got you to make the YouTube videos, then that's better than not. Like for me, like if I could have done some lazy course way, that would have been better than not what I did, which was not do it at all. Right. Like for example, so for this new course I'm working on, we're using Teachable, right? We just decided that that was the lowest obstacle to creating the course. And as Teachable is like, it's like the Uber of courses, right? I'm sure there's other platforms that are similar, but like it makes it very easy to create a course. You don't have to learn anything to use Teachable. It's just like plug and play. And I don't know if Teachable was around 15 years ago, probably not. But as I'm doing it, I'm like, if there was a lazy way to do this 15 years ago, I probably would much more likely to have had a couple courses out because there was a hurdle for me of, like you were saying, like you didn't want to script a video on YouTube. I didn't want to learn how to like install a plugin and like what we do for our course, which is much more like tech heavy, right? Because you created it on the back end. Like there's no way I was going to do that 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it got you to do it. So it's not, is it that bad of a mistake? I like how your mistake is like, well, I've had wild success on YouTube, but.
Well, it hasn't been wild success. Like you look at some of my peers and there's always peers that do better, right?
Yeah.
I just happen to follow a lot of these YouTubers now and like they got to where I was within like less than a year.
We can't all be Mr. Beast.
Doing the right things. I'm not talking about Mr. Beast, yeah. But doing the right things, you know, from the start.
Yeah.
I've always had a, you know, bumble through something really quickly. And then I kind of admire the people that just do things right from the start. They're slower.
Yeah.
But they do things right. And in the long run that.
However, I think if that keeps you from even doing it, then just bumble.
It's true. It's true. All right, let's hear your next one.
Okay. My next mistake. I think my next mistake is one that I'm currently in. And that is I have a couple overseas VAs. And initially when I hired them, I had very, very specific things that I needed done. But then over time, like my businesses have changed. The things I'm doing have changed. And I feel like now they're very, not so much my graphic designer, but my other VA is very underutilized. And it's mostly my fault because I just throw crap at her all the time, right? It's like, this needs to do that. Like, there's just not, like, I think she would be more productive if there were like eight things she did for me every week, right? You do these eight things and just do those and don't do anything, like, don't worry about anything else. Because I feel like every week I'm basically forcing her to learn how to do something different or learn something new. And well, there's nothing wrong with people learning something new. I think that's definitely not the key to like getting the most out of your employees, right? Like it's better if it's like, listen, these are your eight things. You do these every week. If you have extra time, maybe we'll throw in a new project. But I just literally like vomit on her every week of like the stuff that's for me, like in crisis, right? Like, oh, this needs to be done. Like I have, like yesterday, I was like, I need this done. Like, please dedicate 30 minutes a day, every day to get it until it's finished, right? Totally new project. Not the best way to, well, one, it's probably not good for her. Like, she's probably like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing this week. And then two, it's like just too disorganized. Like, it's very chaotic and I don't like it because some days I'm like, I don't even know what she does anymore. Like, I can't remember what I told her to do last week. So that's something that I'm working. I'm like, this morning I was like, I really need to take like an afternoon and just give her like these tasks and just make that her thing.
Huh. I didn't realize you have a underutilized VA. We can utilize her.
Editing is not her thing, as you know.
Oh, I don't know which VA this is. What do you have?
She's not loving our podcast. She edits all the podcasts. She's probably like, oh my gosh, she's finally admitting what a terrible boss she is to me. But I do. I feel bad because I'm like, it's just a constant change and a constant cycling of stuff. And it's not like I wouldn't want to work in that environment. So I can't see how someone else would. So I need to do a better job of that with her.
She sounds really good though. If she's willing to juice all this other and she can figure out how to do all
she
this
is,
random
she's
stuff.
She's like, right. That's, but then I feel like I have someone that's great, but is like I'm not allowing them to kind of work in their genius zone. Right. I'm not letting them like take over stuff. Cause it's just a constant like emergency room environment. So.
Yeah. You know, since we're talking about VAs and hiring, that's always been one of my biggest problems.
Yeah.
Hiring or being willing to do it.
That's a lot of people's problems.
Is it?
Hiring? Yeah.
Being willing to do it. Because in my head right now, we actually need to hire somebody. Actually, I need to hire two people right now. A customer service person for Bumblebee and also a video editor.
Yes.
Right? Another video editor. And here's my mentality. Like I've been out. Like I was out last week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go on another vacation this summer. I keep putting these things off until I have like a block of time to do it. Mm-hmm. And I just think about the daunting task of having to like interview these people, mm-hmm. train them up. And it just, you know, it just feels like a headache for me. I'd rather give more work to my existing people. But on the flip side, I think my existing people are reaching their limit.
Yeah. I think it's hard to be a good boss. I think that's a very underappreciated, like in the, if you're a boss, I think you, it's hard to be good. And I think people who are good bosses, obviously their employees are very happy, or the people that work for them, the contractors. But I think there's not like, hey, you're, that person's a really great person to work for among peers, right? Because you're not going to hear that in the peer world, right? Your peers are probably not going to know that you're a great person to work for or that you're terrible.
You know, what's funny is whenever I talk to like a buddy about these problems, they're like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, just hire somebody. Just do it. I'm like, okay, it's not that easy.
So it's interesting. I think that we were talking about this before we started recording. A couple of my kids work at a restaurant, and across the like little restaurant area, there's a burrito place. And the burrito place and the burger place are friends, right? So they all talk and they all chat, and the burger people go to the burrito place, vice versa. So the manager of the burrito place, I see him all the time because he's always at the burger shop. And he was telling us a while back that, you know, these are like the minimum wage food service type jobs. And he was saying, I hire just about anybody who walks in the door. He's like, some of them work, some of them don't. Like he hires and fires, right? He's just like, I've realized that it's more of a volume game than it is like finding the right people at that level. It's not about finding like the best burrito person who's 17 years old. It's like if the 17-year-old is articulate and they come in, like he'll hire them. And then if they don't work hard or they don't do their job, he'll just fire them. But it's pretty interesting. Like his philosophy is just like hire, 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 fire, fire, fire.
Interesting. I don't know if my wife would feel comfortable.
Yes, I don't. I don't know if that's a. But to me, I've never heard of that. Like to me, it's like I feel like you, right? Where it's this process. They have to be willing to work with other people in the office. Jen has to feel comfortable around them. Like they have to be able to get to work, get, you know, like all those things, right? Plus, they have to be able to do what you need them to do. So it becomes this very daunting task. And then this guy's just like, I'll hire anybody.
I mean, if you think about it, like the people that have been in Bumblebee, like the oldest employee there is, I think it's been there for 7 years now.
Yeah.
Which is a long time. And then my VA, I think she's been with me for 6 years.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, the way I think about it is it takes so much mental energy to hire. I'd much rather just keep my existing folks happy. Yeah. As long as I'm happy with them, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, here's the next one that I'm suffering from right now.
Uh-oh.
So my personality, and I got away with this when I was an engineering director, was I like to press forward quickly, mm-hmm. kind of like a bull. Mm-hmm. I just press forward, and sometimes I leave this mess behind.
Yep. I'm going to need an example of this.
I'll tell you in a sec. Okay. So at my old job, what I would do is, let's say there was a piece of hardware or something to be designed. I would design it really quickly. It would work, but it wasn't necessarily coded very elegantly. And then I'd have my employees kind of beautify it and clean it all up. So what I'm finding, and I was just complaining to you about this, like for Bumblebee Linens, I have all this technical debt right now. And when I first said technical debt, you were like, what? You owe money for...
I thought he bought too many TVs. So...
So I enjoy coding for Bumblebee, like any feature that I need, mm-hmm. but sometimes I just want to get it up.
Yeah.
And I'll do so in a way where like, I might look at it like 3 months later and go, I don't understand anything that I just did. I just know it works, but I don't understand what I did. And I'm now sitting on, there's so many things that need to be upgraded with the website. Mm-hmm. And if I had done everything very methodically, mm-hmm. then this whole upgrade process would be a lot easier because I would understand and I would have commented everything. But now I need to upgrade everything, and now I need to actually rewind and go back and understand the reasons for why I did things and why they're actually that way. Mm-hmm. So there's this one dude I worked with at Tensilica, which is where I used to work. And he was slow and steady, but everything he did was well thought out, methodical. He thought about the future, like, oh, you know, if we ever want to change things 5 years later, mm-hmm. there's a way to do it. And I always really admired working with him, because he had such foresight on anything potentially that would come up. And so anytime I work with him and we need a new feature, he put all that work up front so that going forward, it was so much easier. I'm actually the opposite. I get the feature done now and it works, but then it can be garbage. Unfortunately, I don't have that little minesweeper now. Yes. Sweeping up all my garbage.
So you're the reason why the iPhone battery only lasts 15 minutes after you've had your iPhone for a couple of years. It's your shoddy technology.
My wife's iPhone just died this morning, and it's a brand new phone.
Oh, ouch.
I've never had an Android phone die on me, ever.
The workhorses of the phone world. So that's a pretty good one, because you take the shortcuts, but then you pay in the end.
Yeah. I guess the other way is you pay at first. It's not as quick. I'm just an impatient person, though. You know, when you want to
feature done. Which is funny, because you're not an impatient person.
But I am. Times. What do you mean?
Because you'll also just slog away at things.
But if there's a feature and I want it now, yeah, I'll just get it up and running.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, my next one's going to be weird.
Okay.
But, so one of my regrets, and this also comes, so last week I had dinner with Dana Jean-Zimas. So if you're not familiar with her, she was our Seller Summit closing keynote this year, longtime friend, longtime speaker at Seller Summit, just business genius, right? And I found out from her, she listens to the podcast. So, hey, Dana, you know, I found out a while back that she occasionally takes people under her wing and mentors them when it comes to like buying and selling a business or things like that, because she has so much expertise in that area. And everybody that I know that she has mentored is just like head over heels for her, right? Just literally words like life-changing moment, like things like that. That's how they speak about her. And I feel like Dana has done an excellent job of finding the right people to mentor, because she doesn't mentor a lot of people. Like, don't hit her up for mentoring. Like, this isn't an advertisement. But she's very selective. I feel like it's always been important to me to like help people if they need help, mentor people to the extent that I can. But I feel like a lot of times what happened to me in the past, not so much anymore, was that I would almost feel sorry for somebody or want to rescue them in a way. And so I would help people that like from the very beginning was very obvious they didn't want to help themselves, right? I was not a good judge of, like, they might have been a nice person and they might be a great friend, right? But they just were never going to do the work or put in the work to be successful. So I wasted a lot of time on people that I could have either been spending on my own stuff or, you know, helping somebody that actually was going to take action. And so that, like, I look back on that and then I look at like the people that Dana's helped over the past several years and like where they are and where the people that I helped are, not all of them, but like, you know, and it's like frustrating to me that I like gave up so much of my time, because for me, like, time is my greatest commodity, right? Like, I don't have a lot of time. So the fact that like I invested in people that just were never going to truly like believe in themselves or invest in themselves is exceptionally frustrating to me and a huge regret.
Interesting. I can think of a couple people.
Yes. But shout out to Chris Peach, who literally I on a whim met him in a coffee shop in Arizona that I didn't know him very well. And he wanted some help with his website and Pinterest. And I sat with him for 2 hours and that dude crushed it. Took every piece of advice he learned from you, from Jim Wang, from Deacon, like people like him make me happy that I do invest in people at times, but there's just a list of people that I feel like, oh, what was I thinking? Actually, Lisa Woodruff came to Seller Summit this year that organized 365. Her and I had a mentoring call years ago and she's killing it. Like, so there are people that I.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in your mastermind, right?
Yep.
Yeah. She's crushing it. So there are people, but there's also a list of people that I feel like, and the people that I feel like I just like kind of was like, no, I really want to help. It's like at some point you got to like cut the cord and be like, you know what? You're not willing to do the work. I need to move on. And I was not good at doing that at all.
I actually have low standards for helping people as long as they do the action.
Right.
I'm willing to help.
Yeah.
You know what's frustrating, actually? I do website critiques for the class. Mm-hmm. I would say that 60 to 70% of the people after I do the website critique don't do anything in my critique.
Doesn't that make you mad?
It does, actually.
Yeah.
Makes me frustrated, but I've gotten over that now.
Yeah.
You know, I did my best. I spent a lot of time on these, right?
Oh, no, yeah.
I literally redesigned their website for them.
Yeah. I can remember, actually, speaking of that, when I launched my jewelry website and you said, hey, and you sent me a mock-up. Like, it wasn't a website. You just sent me a mock-up from Photoshop and it was like, hey, I'd make these changes to your homepage, right? Because I think I sent it to you and was like, hey, what do you think? And I spent the whole weekend changing the website. I was like, if you're telling me to do this and like you took the time to circle and put some arrows on a page, like I'm figuring this out. Like, and it was hard because I didn't know how to use Shopify. I didn't know, like, I just wasn't like, I'm not a graphic designer or a web designer. So it was tough, but I was like, if someone like you who had a lot more experience than me was going to take time to give me that information, I sure as heck was going to do it. That's what I don't understand when people don't. Sometimes it's like they come to you for advice and it's like, yeah, that's just not going to work for me. I get it. Like, that happens. But it's actually, Shalene's been talking a lot about this on her stories where people are like, I want to travel the world, because she's on this like crazy like world traveling thing right now. And how do I make money? And it's like, do you watch anything that she does? Like, you clearly aren't making an effort. And she's like kind of irritated about it. She's like, these people aren't making an effort. You just want me to like personally like help you? No, like listen to the podcast, join the Patreon, do whatever. I think I needed to be a better judge of like who was willing to show up and who wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are always in love with the outcome, but they're not in love with like the process.
Yeah. I remember one person that I mentored, and she actually was great. But when I talked to her after the first like conversation we had, I was like, I think you're wasting a lot of time on social media. And this was like 2012. So it was like Twitter and Facebook, right? There wasn't a lot of places to waste time, or maybe 2010. And I said, there was a little app that you could install on your like Chrome extension, and it tracks your time on the different websites, and it could lock down websites so that you couldn't like get on Facebook or get on Twitter, you know, back then. And after this, so we met, and then we met a month later, and she was like, I'm embarrassed, because she was like, I don't think it's that bad. And I was like, I think it is. And she was like embarrassed to show me like how much time. She's like, you're right. She's like, After the second week of like looking at all the time, she basically blocked most of the sites for like certain hours of the day. And she had already accomplished like 4 of her goals just in like the 2 week period, just from like being aware of what was going on. Because I think most of the time we're just not aware.
Yeah, no, totally. Actually, I question what I work on almost every other week. You know, during those Fridays when I'm like, is this doing anything?
Yeah.
Should I be even doing this? Is part of the reason why I cut back on the TikToks, because it wasn't really measurable whether it was doing anything. I might pick it up again if I can outsource the entire thing, because I do think
it's
going to
be like
benefits.
Fake Steve doing the TikToks.
Not fake Steve, but someone who can just cut up my existing clips, right?
Yeah.
Because I do see value now, actually, in social media. Like in my book, I kind of poo-pooed social media, but and I still to a certain extent poo-poo it. But now, like, Instagram has these lists, which is kind of like, it's not really email, but you can contact people on Messenger and Instagram whenever you feel like it, as long as they subscribe to your list. That's kind of like a poor man's email in my mind. And I actually just tried it for the first time for this webinar that I'm giving today, actually. And it works pretty well. It's like the old school Facebook Messenger, when you could always do a broadcast. If people opt into your broadcast, you can just send them private messages directly. And so I'm kind of on the bandwagon again, just because of that feature. TikTok, still not so much, but
I thought you did get a lot of leads from TikTok.
It was hard to say. Yeah. I get a lot more leads from Twitter. So that's why I feel like Twitter, of all things, is... Are you on Threads by any... By the way,
no, but I was gonna actually ask you offline about it. So,
I mean, I'm on it, but I mean, I was thinking to myself as I signed up, I'm like, great, just another thing I got to post to now.
Isn't Threads like Twitter though? It's a competitor.
It is. I actually have my Twitter guy just posting the posting on Threads.
Like, I wonder how many people are going to be doing that, just posting to both places.
Well, they have like 100 million users already. I think that's just, I think there's going to be mass attrition, right?
Okay, but that's not fair. I mean, it's fair. It's, what's the, I can't think of the word. I'm having like a mind fart. It's like they promoted on Instagram. They pulled everybody off Instagram onto Threads. So it's not like they launched like TikTok and were like, when TikTok kind of blew up, it's like it was just coming from organic, like people, everyone wanted to be on TikTok. For Threads, like it's based off Instagram. So it's not like they didn't have, they couldn't pull from like this massive audience, right? So it feels a little unfair that like, because people are like, this is the fastest growing app. And I'm like, eh, I mean, yes, but.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think people are on Threads because it was just like a one-click sign-up.
Yes, yeah.
Right? Pull everyone over from Instagram. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of open it right now like once every other day just to see what's going on. It seems like a different crowd than Twitter
because
it's a bunch of Instagram people, whereas Twitter is more like, at least for the people I follow at least.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's just more of the same.
Yeah,
there's just there's nothing special about it. So
yeah, I'll probably sign up in the next day or two. I just
I mean, the good thing is like your follower count is it doesn't start from zero.
Yeah,
right. Because the people who are already following you on Instagram can instantly follow you on Threads as well.
Yeah.
Okay, is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay, so this next one is just something in general I've always had a problem with. Which is, I always just wait too long for to take action on things. And I'll just give you an example. During the pandemic, like my blog SEO started tanking, right? Tanking is not the right word, actually. It was a gradual downslope.
Okay.
Right? And I noticed something was up. And I just sat there and watched it go down. For about a year.
You were like the guy on the Titanic that was still playing the horn as his ship is sinking.
And I should know better because this is how I used to trade stocks, right? I would hold on to the stock, watching it go down, thinking to myself, hey, it's going to turn around. It's going to turn around on its own. And I've like forced myself, at least from a stock trading perspective, just to cut my losses, right? But I still find myself like, I was just thinking about with the blog, like, if I had taken action a lot earlier, like now the blog is at the highest traffic levels that it's ever been. And if I had just taken action on it earlier and gotten some help, I could have turned around this thing a lot faster. I never would have experienced those lulls.
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix these things, by the way, that I'm talking about here.
Well, it's interesting. Because a lot of the stuff we're talking about is about like procrastination or not making the decision or not taking the action or letting something kind of pass by. Like they're all very similar, like similar behaviors.
They are. I'm so good at taking action on certain things. And there's certain
and so
things
bad
I'm
on
not.
Others.
I don't get it.
Without rhyme or reason to some extent, right? That's the weird part of it. It's not like, because I feel like in some ways you're good at taking action on the things that you really believe will move the needle. And you're good at like saying no to things that you're like, that's just not going to help me. So I'm not going to do it. But then other times there's things that will help you where you're just like the other week you were like, I just am not in the mood to do it. I think that's what you told me. I was like, well, okay. Thanks for your honesty. Here's the thing, like you're also not trying to build your business from scratch right this minute. You have a business that's running and paying the bills and things like that. So you have the ability to say, I just don't feel like doing it, right? Like you can do that, but that's probably not going to be like a long-term plan because that at some point you're like your SEO just kind of nosedive, but slowly slipped. And you just kind of was like, I don't feel like doing it. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, now I feel like doing it because I'm in a crisis.
It wasn't, I didn't feel like doing it, but I had just had this hope, you know, because SEO fluctuates so much. Yeah. I was thinking, yeah, this is just an update. It'll come back. It'll come back because it's happening.
The rescue
like
boats will arrive. I will live.
And I forgot like that saying that my dad always used to say to me, like, unless you do something, things are just going to stay the same.
It's true.
Like, you can't expect things to change unless you do something about it, is what he always used to tell me.
Yeah, it's true. That's actually a great saying. Okay, I can do one more and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
And this is actually in a little bit of a different vein. Well, same theme though. So I turned down a lot of things over the past 20 years in blogging and marketing. And I mean, I said yes to a ton of things too. So it's not like I've just like been like, I'm not doing anything. But when I look back at some of the things that I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Or, oh, I don't want, like, I turned down some stuff I should not have turned down, and not necessarily money based. It was more like, either, and like probably a lot of self-doubt, like, oh, I'm probably not actually qualified to do that, or I'm not good enough, or I don't know how to do something like that, or, oh, they probably need someone better or different, or, you know, there's a bunch of different reasons, right? There's not one specific reason, but looking back, there are tons of things, like speaking opportunities, or, I mean, I probably turned down 4 book deals, like legitimate book deals, not, you know, type
that was
thing.
Wise.
It was, yes, that one I don't regret. Now I definitely don't regret it. After the past 6 months. So yeah, there's some that I turned down a television show. I don't regret turning that down at all. Like, I think that was definitely the right move. But what I didn't do in that was like negotiate something else instead. I just was like blanket no to a lot of things, as opposed to that's not a good fit, but like, what can we do that is a good fit, right? I don't think I had enough belief in myself to realize that if someone wants me, wants to work with me, wants to do something with me, and what they want to do isn't exactly what I want to do, I can flip the script. I can propose something different, right? This isn't like a be all end all, like you have to do this exact thing. And I think I felt like it was like, well, this is what they're offering. If I don't take this exact thing, then there's nothing else on the table. And that's totally not true. Like, for example, I just took on a brand new email client last week. And, you know, I had an idea of what he needed, and he and I had a conversation, and I realized that, like, you know, he actually needs something a little bit different than I initially thought. And so I was like, yeah, I can still do that. Like, I don't have to stick to like the initial thing. But I think for many years, I didn't have the confidence to do that. I didn't have the probably belief in myself that I could just say, well, I don't want to do this TV show, but maybe I could do this, or I could do a segment, or I could do, you know, 1 hour special, right? I'm not going to do a season, not doing 12 episodes, but how about one episode or one, you know, thing like that. And I didn't think that way. And like now, and it's probably has to do with getting older and just being wiser in general as you get older, learning from your mistakes, but definitely wish I would have flipped the script on a few things.
Interesting. It's probably because you're not Asian.
I'm not a good negotiator.
I'll tell you what. No. It's got nothing to do with that. Like, we're just kind of brought up to bargain for everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like in the culture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah. You know what I found just in life also? Everything really is negotiable.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, almost everything. Like, even if, like, Noah Kagan has this ask for a discount challenge.
Oh.
Where you just walk in a store and say, hey, can I get a 10% discount on that?
Yeah.
Or you walk in and say, hey, it's my birthday. Can I get that for free?
Yeah.
Right? And it actually works sometimes.
Yeah. And it's funny. My ex-husband used to always ask for a military discount everywhere we went. And I was like kind of embarrassed by it sometimes, because it's like, which is stupid, because it's like, if you don't have to pay that much, don't pay it. Like, that's so silly. Like, why do you like giving people extra money? But it was just like a constant thing, right? And it was interesting, because when companies or stores didn't have a military discount, they would apologize. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have that discount. It's like they feel bad. Like, you don't feel bad. They feel bad. So yeah, I don't think I'm at that level where I can ask for a discount on everything, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'll you know, the older I get, the more I want to keep my own money.
You know, it's funny. This is a good episode for me. I got a lot of things off my chest.
Therapy session?
Therapy session.
Well, I think if for people listening, if there's like a clear takeaway, I think one of the things that you and I both sort of over the years, it's really about, you know, doing things right the first time, doing things the right way, investing a little more time, taking chances on yourself, not being afraid to do something. There's just all, it's all like sort of personality and mental driven. It's not about a skill set or a strategy. It's really about like when I'm going to do something or not do something, like what are these actions going to render me in 5 years or 10 years, right? Like where are we going to be? If I do the shortcut to do this code for Bumblebee, am I 3 years from now going to be holed up in my office on a weekend because now it's obsolete? I can't remember what I did and it's affecting five other things on the website. And now you're in technology debt.
Okay, it's not as dramatic as that, but yes, it's gonna make the migration a little more challenging. Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.